I'm Kim Carson. I'm so happy you found my podcast, Conversations with Kim. Whether I'm having a conversation with a celebrity, an author, history maker, record breaker, or the average everyday person, we all have a story to tell. And maybe that story just might change another person's life. We can learn so much from each other. Let us discover some of life's most valuable lessons with today's guest on Conversations with Kim. Today, my conversation is with Mike Edison, author of the book, You Are a Complete Disappointment, a triumph memoir of failed expectations. You have a long list of credentials and accomplishments. Anybody can Google it if they're interested. So thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm coming to you live from New York City where the sun is out for a change.
Yeah, we've got the sun out for a change here, too. Hey, you know what? Let's talk about the title of the book. Let's start with that. You Are a Complete Disappointment. It intrigued me. And as I went to read it, wow.
Yeah, well, those were my father's last words to me, quite literally, on a hospital bed in Arizona where he was living. And I went out there. It was Father's Day. I went out to see him, and it was very bizarre. He had an oxygen mask on. He wasn't doing very well, obviously.
Right.
And he said, I'm glad you're here. There's something I need to tell you. And I kind of sidled up close to the bed to hear what he had to say, and he said, you are a complete disappointment.
Yeah.
Man. And it just started. That was just the beginning, because after that, it was like, you are broken and you need to be fixed and you're not as smart as you think you are. And you think you're a hotshot writing books in New York City, but you're not. No one cares. And then he really sunk it in deep. He said, you're the only person in this family who is fat. It was like, oh, wow, really?
It's the final zinger.
Oh, man, you know, it's like, this is really how we're going to part ways.
You're right.
But I think
for eternity?
Yeah. I think he had to, you know, just one more shot at one-upping me somehow, because there's no way I was going to fight back.
Right.
I mean, honestly, it's, you know, it's a little cowardly. I mean, I can't fight back a dying guy lying in a hospital bed. I mean, you know, not to set the bar too low of what it means to be a mensch, but I'm just going to stand there. I'm going to take it on the chin, because what else are you going to do? And it was my dad, and it broke my heart, and we never had a great relationship, but it was terrible. I left that room, I was a mess.
Yeah, I mean, when I just read the line, I read the context of what's happening, and I read the line, I felt as if I had been, like, sucker punched. Like, I wasn't certain I heard what I thought I was reading.
It was like a sucker punch, and, you know, and people always laugh, too. And then they say, oh, I'm sorry, Mike, I'm sorry I'm laughing, I'm sorry that had to happen to you. But it is this sort of, like, deathbed scene, and you're expecting something else to happen, and it's, you know, it's kind of perfect comic irony, you know, this is what
you
said. It's like a Mel Brooks movie or
a
movie or something, but except it was freaking real, you know?
Right. And that's what I'm thinking. Like, so when I'm reading your story, I mean, it's a story of growing up in the 70s and 80s with a father that looked to me like he was very jealous and very competitive with you. And that just can't make for a fun childhood.
Well, you got the first part right. He was very competitive and definitely like a narcissist, and always had to prove that he was the one, you know, in control of whatever relationship, you know, it was that we had. You know, you're not good enough to do this. You'll never make it. And jealous of my ability to have fun. And as people who knew my dad told me when I was working on the book, they said, yeah, he resented your freedom because he had a very strict set of rules by which he lived, and he expected me to follow suit. And I mean, it's crushing. My mom told me, he said, he gave up on you when he realized you weren't going to be a preppy conservative, you know, playing tennis and, you know, wearing sweaters like he was. And I said, well, how old was I when that happened? And she said, well, 8. Seriously, 8 years old? As well, you had 2 younger brothers. He thought maybe you'd have a better chance with them.
Oh, wow. I mean, and that's what I was going to say. Like, where does that come from? When in writing this book and in doing interviews and talking to people, are you talking to people who share your story or a similar story?
Yeah, it's really not uncommon. It's sad. kids and, you know, people, adults now, who are so discouraged by their parents to live their dreams, to, you know, the idea is to be who you want to be, not to be the person that your parents told you you should be.
Right.
And I met so many people, especially people who wanted to pursue, you know, non-traditional sorts of lives. And I mean, I'm not that weird a guy. I mean, I wanted to be a writer and a musician. I mean, everybody dreams, right?
Right.
And I worked towards it. I had every crappy job imaginable on the way to finding myself in this, you know, very fortunate position where I do write for a living and make music all the time. But to my dad, that if I were to be successful, it would have been an indictment of his system.
Right.
You know, it would have
right.
meant that his system was flawed. And he told me straight up, he says, I hate you because you get to live your dreams, and I never got to live mine.
Why didn't he live his dreams?
That's the question of the ages, isn't it? Why doesn't anybody? Because, you know, people fear failure because they worry about what other people would think, which was certainly for my dad a big thing. He was very, very concerned about what people thought of him. He had a lot of status anxiety. And he was a snob, too, which was part of the problem with me. And part of the book is about my lowbrow taste, such as it is. But even when I was a kid, I was 8 years old and watching professional wrestling on TV, and you tell me, why don't you just grow up? It's stupid. Hey, at 8 years old, I knew it was fake, but I'm 8 years old. Give me
right,
a break.
Right, exactly.
You know, and I was reading comic books. They're stupid. And watching horror movies, they're dumb. But I'm 8 years old. Quit telling me to grow up already.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, oddly, I still like comic books and horror movies and all these things. And along the way, I managed to, you know, discover Beethoven and Brahms, too. It's not all
right,
like that.
Right. It's not one-dimensional. It's not one-dimensional.
Well, you know what they say, curiosity killed the cat, but satisfaction brought him back.
Yeah, right.
And that's my story, you know? Wow. But he really, really wasn't ready for that.
No.
Curiosity is not something that's rewarded, you know, in certain crowds, because curiosity is danger, and dreams mean instability, you know, and it, you know, puts you into a place where there's no security, you know, asking too many questions.
I can't imagine not dreaming. I can't imagine dreaming as much as living, breathing.
Sure, I mean, I don't want to, you know, it's a cliche, if you can dream it, you can be it, but you got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, you start in your basement, you know, being a mirror rock star, but then you buy a set of drums and, hey, a lot of people more talented than me, you know, never got out of the basement. I'm very lucky we got to play in my bands in the 80s. We played in Tokyo and, you know, in Paris and London. We opened up for the Ramones numerous times. But you had to, you know, again, you had to be in it to win it, and I don't want to, you know, drive the cliche too hard, but it's much better to have failed, you know, and suffered defeat, you know, and never even know victory because you didn't, you know, and then to live in the gray twilight because you didn't have a chance, you know, you didn't have the balls to try.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, you tell lots of stories like this in the book, and they're all different kinds of stories. You know, kind of, there's some about your friends. The one I really like, there's a couple of them, but especially is about your friends, how you would, they'd invite you over to their house for dinner. And when you'd go over, you'd notice some things about their families. What were those? And how old were you when you did that?
Oh, I was just a little kid, 8, 9, 10, you know, maybe even, you know, through adolescence a little bit. And it was shocking to discover that people sat at the table and talked to each other.
Yeah.
I mean, in my house, my parents just yelled at each other until my father moved out. And then
right.
My mother just yelled at her kids.
right.
But to see someone say, like, oh, how was school? Do you have a girlfriend? What did you learn in American history today?
Yeah.
And then there's realize, you know, oh, we all like the Beatles. Like, we have something in common.
Right.
It was like, it was just blew my mind because my experience at family dinner, which was, by the way, my mother was like an awful cook, too. Like,
yeah, that didn't help, right?
you know, like the worst of, like 1950s cooking, but like sort of percolated through the 70s. So it was like ragu brand sauce, La Toy brand Chinese food, and just terrible, terrible food. And, you know, it's not sharing. It wasn't no joy in eating. And I go to someone's house, and they're like eating and talking. And it was like, wow, this is not what a family is supposed to be, I think. It wasn't my experience.
The joy, that joy. You know, there's the other food story. I love it. It was about the meatball pizza. Because I still don't really understand what that's about.
the Great Meatball Pizza Incident, as now known, sort of like ground zero for, boy, that's when I realized my parents were not going to stay together. It was the worst fight they ever got into in public, and it's my dad's odd sense of pride. And, you know, the real story is it's an inability to realize that how good life really is and how good it can be if you just let it.
Right.
You know, the meatball pizza thing was, holy cow, I'm 10 years old. I've never heard of a meatball pizza. This is like a brave new world for me, you know, where pizza and meatballs live together in some sort of harmony. And do the meatballs actually come on the pizza? It was this crazy thing. But my dad, I don't know, it was a pizza topping. I really have no idea. It was just too much. And he started a fight with my mom, and we were with another family. And, you know, like I said, they didn't really get this concept of family dining and sharing. And it just became...
If somebody, like, sent over a pizza or something,
yeah,
right, and he wouldn't accept the food...
Well, we were sharing. We was with our neighbors. We were like, you know, we were sharing pizzas, but he said, we don't have to share. We can afford our own. And it was a really weird message. It was just pizza and
right,
soda pop. You know, I mean, it wasn't a thing. I laugh. I mean, this was a guy. We'd go to a Chinese restaurant, and they'd order the poo-poo platter for two, even though we were five.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, my God. It's like, please, you know, can't we just have some fun? And that's the point of the story. I realized it right then. It's like, dude, you've got pizza, meatball pizza, the greatest thing ever invented, and root beer, and three kids that are, like, great. And, you know, there's Elton John playing on the jukebox. This is like heaven. This is, how could it possibly be better than this? And yet he still had to find, you know, fault with my mom and be in control, because control was like a really big thing for him, and destroyed what should have been a really, really happy moment.
Yeah, and, you know, I know we're only going to have a couple more minutes, but I wanted to get in two or three more questions. Dr. Headshrinker, as you lovingly refer to her, said to you, you are who you want to be, not who he told you to be. So how did you begin to be that person, and how did you silence your dad's voice in your head to hear your own voice and become the man that you wanted to be?
Well, people always say, Mike, you know, you're such a rebel, you know. And I say, well, I don't really think of myself in terms of a rebel, not like, you know, like James Dean, rebel without a cause, because we saw how that ended, not very well. And to me, I was just following my own star. Somewhere in me is like, hey, this is what I want to do. You know, I heard a rock and roll record on the radio when I was eight, and I was like, holy cow, that's what I want to do. I want to get a guitar or, you know, on a drum set and do that. And I just sort of followed my own star. And it's tough because my dad's like, no, you can't, and no, you can't, and no, you're not good enough, and it's a waste of time. And I don't know, maybe by force of will, or because, you know, once you've tasted it a little bit, it's hard to get it out of your system, that rock and roll stuff.
Yeah. But like she also pointed out, he sabotaged you at the same time, like with your drums and your talent.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think he thought it was a threat. And if I were, again, to be successful under my set of rules, or really anarchy in his book, which meant playing the drums and, you know, playing with, you know, paints and cameras, I wanted to be an artist, then it was an indictment of what he had taught was the only one true path to success. And in fact, how he measured success, which is really like by what school you went to and how much money you make, because he was a snob. And
yeah,
where you went to school is how he thought that was somehow connected to your worth as a person. And how could he tell his friends that, what's your son doing? Oh, he's playing drums in a punk rock band. I mean, never mind that we were, you know, I mean, we weren't like this wildly successful thing, but we were having a good time. We were playing in London and Paris and Amsterdam and Berlin. It was great.
So,
I was 21 years old.
So,
I said,
Mike,
well, how come I never heard of you? I said, because you're a 50-year-old guy, and I'm a, you know, who doesn't even like music in the first place, and I'm 21 years old and playing in a punk rock band. Where would you have heard of us?
Yeah, I mean, I never thought of it that way. Like I was trying to see from his perspective, but it was just so, it was a very narrow perspective. Was there anything good that came from having such a disapproving and negative father like the one you had?
Well, his last great gift was telling me that I am a complete disappointment, and now I have a story to tell. I mean, that's it. I got some odd sort of closure. And when he said to me, you know, you are a complete disappointment, and I sort of walked off this heartbroken mess, and now I'm telling my story, and I'm getting this amazing feedback from people who said, holy cow, my dad always told me I'm stupid, and women too, moms and daughters, like, why can't you be more like your sister? What's wrong with you? And especially people who wanted to be in the arts or something, you know, more non-traditional. And they said, wow, this book, you know, really resonated with me. And parents are reminded, too, that don't discourage your kids. If your kid wants to sing, let them sing. If you want to play baseball, play catch with them. I mean, what's wrong with you? You know, let kids be kids.
Are you a father?
I'm not, and only because I think my timing wasn't right. I didn't meet the right girl at the right time.
Yeah.
But people tell me I'd be pretty good at it.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like you would. And, you know, you talk about growing up Jewish in New Jersey in the 70s and 80s. And, I mean, what's your biggest memory from that you take away?
Well, you know, I think I spent years being like 8 and 18 basically begging for supervision. My parents were very remote. They weren't helicopter parents or like far from it. And, you know, we played violent street hockey. You know, people got knocked down. We once gave someone a 2-minute penalty for crying.
Right.
I don't think that goes over anymore. But you learned how to, you know, how to take a punch, you know, both literally and you know, metaphorically. And that's okay. We all grew up kind of tough and a little bit better for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you learned how to have fun. And my thing is, you know, we learned how to have imagination. When you went home back in those days, you were home. You weren't connected to your friends the way you are now, you know?
It was nice. I remember it, too. And I just love the book. I just love the book. It was such an easy read. Today, my conversation was with Mike Edison, author of the book, You Are a Complete Disappointment, a Triumphant Memoir of Failed Expectations. Before we go, website address and also... anything else?
I hope people will come and find me at MikeEdison.com. And there's all sorts of cartoons and comics and videos and rock and roll music on my website. And
yeah, it's a great website. Great website.
And we're on the road right now. I'm taking it around. I mean, we're coming to Chicago and Milwaukee. It's not too far from you guys. Hopefully, we'll make it out to Grand Rapids as well sometime. But, yeah, I feel like I'm a troubadour just going around telling the story. I'm really just really jazzed like by your reaction to it. I really appreciate it very much. I'm really kind of flattered and humbled by it. And, you know, like Dr. Headshrinker says, it's about being the person you want to be and not the person you were told you should be.
Yeah, I love that. What a great closing note. Thanks so much for the conversation, Mike. You're great.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Conversations with Kim. Reach out to me, Kim Carson, via social media on Instagram and YouTube, Kim Carson Now. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, Kim Carson. Listen to my radio show middays on WLAV.com. And each Wednesday, I join the Hot Topics chat segment, 9 a.m. Eastern Time on ABC's Take 5 and Company on WZZM13.com. Listen to more episodes at kimcarson.podomatic.com. Until we meet again, thanks for listening to my podcast, Conversations with Kim.